Welcome back on this Monday, the 24th day of February, 2020. Some are even calling it Black Monday, but maybe it's a bit early for that. But we'll get around to all of that over the next few minutes. Anyway, I'm your host, Mark Hall, and among other things, what we mean by that is that the somnambulant level of complacency in the manipulated markets finally seems to have been shaken off, and as word about the actual extent of the coronavirus pandemic and the economic impact spreads worldwide in spite of the various ministries of propaganda, the socialist media outlets, and of course, who? It looks like some of them may have decided it's finally time to panic. And since things are moving very rapidly, let's kick this one off in order, more or less chronologically, just to set the stage. It'll be really, really bad, said a Sunday evening headline from Zero Hedge. China faces financial Armageddon, with 85% of businesses there set to run out of cash within about 3 months. CCN News had an earlier report this morning about the Dow futures that were down 800 points. Now, said one analyst, comes the 25% crash. Wait a minute, Dow futures are down 900 points, says the Zero Hedge headline just a bit later, erasing year-to-date gains and below the Iran missile strike spike lows. The 5 a.m. update said U.S. futures have now plunged 2.4%, extending overnight losses. Gold soars while COVID-19 contagion craters previous complacency. And as the markets open, we have this one from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge. Black Monday, they called it. But I see some other stories out there calling it Red Monday, so pick your color. Dow futures down 800. Europe crashes the most in 4 years. And gold and the VIX volatility index have both soared. Just like that, they write, complacency is gone with a bang. What with traders having learned to ignore coronavirus news thanks to manipulated and fabricated new case data, they put it in quotes, coming out of China, showing not to worry your pretty little heads, the pandemic is easing. On Monday, markets got a very rude wake-up call and then plunged after both South Korea and Italy reported sudden surges in new cases as two new offshore viral clusters have emerged. And we'll get back to that news in just a minute here. But if you're curious, as I start this recording around 11 a.m. Eastern time, U.S. markets show the Dow down about 875 points, similar bloodbaths both in the S&P 500 and NASDAQ, while gold is up well over 30 bucks, almost 2% on the morning. That puts it at $1,675 per ounce that you might still have trouble getting your hands on for that price, while silver's up well over 30 cents, again, about 1.75%, and now trading between $18.75 and almost $19. For one of those COMEX paper ounces. So on next to the whys, what was revealed over the weekend that those of us who've been paying attention haven't known for quite a while now? Bottom line, basically nothing. It's just that it's increasingly difficult to even deny what's going on. For example, for the past 2 weeks, says one piece from Zero Hedge, dated Sunday evening, even as markets took delight in China's obviously doctored and fabricated numbers, showing things were not nearly as bad as some were saying, they've warned again and again this was not the case, as recent data out of South Korea, Japan, and now Italy has finally confirmed. But for all their assertions to the contrary, Chinese workers simply refuse to go back to work, even with Foxconn offering its workers extra bonuses if they would just go back to the factory. And as a result, it's clear the economy there has simply ground to a halt. Here are a summary of some of their headlines. On-the-ground indicators confirm worst-case scenario. China is disintegrating, said one we've talked about here. Steel demand, property sales, traffic are all approaching zero. And terrifying charts show that China's economy remains basically completely paralyzed. And ultimately, it's not getting any better, as the latest updates out of China demonstrate. And they got lots of charts to make that point. But for those that don't have a Bernie Sanders level of ignorance of actual economics, says Zero Hedge, let's start with Chinese businesses. While the giant communist Chinese-connected state-owned enterprises will likely have enough lifeblood of liquidity to last them for 2 or 3 quarters, it's the country's small businesses that are facing a head-on collision with the iceberg, because according to the Nikkei, over 85% of small businesses there, which employ about 80% of China's population, are expected to run out of cash within 3 months, and a third expect all of their cash to be gone within a month. And should this happen, not only will China's economy completely collapse, but China's $40 trillion financial system will disintegrate too, as it's suddenly flooded with literally trillions in bad loans. And for those that do survive, there's other bad news. A new survey from Tsinghua University and Peking University says that about a third of their respondents believe the outbreak is likely to cut into their full-year revenue by more than 50%. So forget about profits for the foreseeable future. On then to the other news, mostly over the weekend, that might finally have penetrated the consciousness, if they have one, of the various markets. Let's start with a headline from Shepherd Embellus and IntelliHub. World coronavirus updates, it says, video after video of the unthinkable. And by all calculations, we're currently in a level 6 pandemic worldwide. But the WHO has failed to announce it. So now for the details. South Korea has raised their national threat level to red alert for the first time since the H1N1 swine flu outbreak back in 2009. The total number of confirmed cases in the country reached 763. That's a jump overnight of 161 and a 25-fold increase over the past week. South Korea's confirmed 7 dead. Meanwhile, the Italian government now says they have 152 confirmed cases, up from 3 in just a matter of days. 3 people have already died, and authorities have now locked down about a dozen small towns and canceled events all across the north part of Italy, including Venice's Carnival. And in Iran, they've confirmed 8 deaths related to the coronavirus, the most outside of China. And from China itself, in a report that was released about 4 hours late, I mean, come on, who are we kidding? Who cares what they have to say anyway? Because what we do know is they've been lying about the numbers, probably by at least an order of magnitude or two. So officially, they've got 77,000 plus cases. What does that really mean? Probably way over a million. Total deaths approaching 2,600. Yeah, sure. And the odds are they cremated more than that over the weekend. Here's a telling headline, though, from China. And you can rest assured Chinese state-run socialist media platforms are going to nip this one in the bud. A video of Chinese authorities who appear to be confiscating consumer items in supermarkets under the guise of checking commodity prices in the Wuhan part of the country has gone viral on social media, probably mostly outside of China, sparking shock and outrage, according to the Epoch Times. And the video is actually several days old. But as J.D. Hayes points out, you probably won't find too many better reasons to start becoming a prepper. And the rest of the story is informative, too. The owner told the Epoch Times, "Today, local government officers started grabbing things as soon as they got inside my shop, saying that I opened the shop to carry out business." Noting that under the city's virus-imposed lockdown, shops aren't permitted to open as a way to control the spread. But it would appear those rules can be broken at will by the same government that imposed them. The owner noted he only went to his shop to get some noodles and other supplies for himself, not to open up for business, and certainly not to allow government-sanctioned shoplifting. And with a segue like that, I'm tempted to go to Bernie Sanders' win over the weekend in Nevada, but we'll come back to that in a minute. First, though, President Trump was reportedly livid after 14 passengers from the Diamond Princess infected with the coronavirus were flown back to the United States without the State Department having notified him and having done so against his wishes, according to none other than the WAPO. Trump and his coronavirus task force were told last Saturday, not the first time they've been lied to, that Americans quarantined on that luxury sick cruise ship would be brought home on 2 chartered planes, but that those with infections or symptoms would remain in Japan. But that decision was overruled without the president's knowledge, according to the report. But wait, there's more. Somebody, probably not the president, for reasons that are becoming obvious, but still in the deep state, also wanted to quietly move 35 to 50 infected coronavirus patients from Travis Air Force Base to a state-run facility for the mentally disabled in Costa Mesa, California, outside Los Angeles. And you could probably be forgiven for thinking we're talking about nutcases in the Hollywood Hills. And in this case, as Mike Adams for Natural News reports, the plot is just beginning to thicken. Because the so-called Fairview Development Center near L.A., where the government tried to house up to 50 infected patients, has zero isolation rooms, no viral containment facilities, and not even any training for biosafety level 4 biohazards. Which begs the question, why would the United States Air Force or their deep state puppet masters attempt to relocate so many infected coronavirus patients to a facility right in the middle of a high-density population area near Los Angeles, rather than just keeping them at Travis Air Force Base where they have containment? The idiocy here seems not only incredibly unwise, he writes, but almost criminally negligent. Unless, obviously, the goal is something very different. And that at least is consistent with the California mentality that we've been witnessing from the governor's mansion for quite a while, where more carriers of deadly diseases seem to be exactly the kind of things they want to bring into their sanctuary cities. Oh, and Adams asked one more thing, too. How can there be up to 50 infected patients wanting to be moved by the Air Force when the CDC claims there are only 35 or so infected in the entire nation? Maybe everybody's lying. But the more you see of this story, the more it just reeks. According to the Fairview Development Center newsroom, although they're nearly shut down today, the center still has 200 staffers on their payroll, and it's not clear exactly what those 200 people are doing since there are only 6 patients remaining. Hey, we welcome your theories, says Adams. The Department of Developmental Services provides services and supports, it says, to individuals with developmental disabilities through state-operated developmental centers and community facilities. But they have a long history, notes Adams, of mysterious deaths and sexual abuse of residents. But the good news is they've achieved a 100% vaccination rate among all their residents over the many years of their existence. And according to public records, about 43% of their patients are given hypnotic drugs and similar pharmaceuticals to boot. Adams quotes the Orange County Register, which noted that 8 people suffering from things like schizophrenia, severe intellectual disabilities, and other debilitating conditions died at Fairview Developmental Center between 2002 and 2011, at least partly because of neglect or lack of supervision. And all of the mysterious deaths, say reports, were covered up by California state bureaucrats and were only released after a 3-year court battle fought by the Center for Investigative Reporting. The Fairview, continues the story, has 396 beds and has housed hundreds of mentally disturbed individuals with autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and other developmental disorders. And in 2016, a plan was unveiled to close the facility, but it still remains semi-operational. But would you be surprised to learn that California commie Governor Newsom is looking into transforming the entire thing into a kind of homeless camp? And last week, after at least part of the U.S. government tried to secretly export 35 to 50 infected patients from Travis Air Force Base into Fairview, city officials of Costa Mesa got word and actually did the right thing for once. They filed an emergency lawsuit with federal courts in California, and who can believe it? The courts actually issued a temporary restraining order prohibiting the transfer of patients. Evidently, the one thing California still respects is NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard. Although some of us might suggest, hey guys, wake up, it's a bit too late now for that. From there, though, the story descends from bad to downright ugly. Most disturbingly, writes Mike Adams, the Fairview has a history of patient deaths related to superbugs and infections. And he quotes RevealNews.org, describing a number of such cases, from septic shock and MRSA to infections from misplaced feeding tubes, some of which dragged on for months while staff failed to notice. Which begs the obvious question, says Adams, how is a facility that can't handle MRSA going to deal with the COVID-19 Wuhan coronavirus bioweapon that spreads through the air in stealth mode and is carried by people who don't even show any symptoms whatsoever? Not that they'd notice anyway. And here he goes back to the OC Register to quote a retired police officer from San Diego, Larry Ingram, whose brother died at Fairview in 2007 from a broken neck, and who describes the facility as a prison camp with prison-like conditions, and he says it even smells like a prison. And furthermore, quote, it was shoddy, it was run down. Which leads Adams to suggest perhaps that's why the Air Force chose it in the first place for their coronavirus quarantine, but without any real isolation facilities, because it'll end up being no more effective than the Diamond Princess cruise ship was. Well, unless you define effectiveness from a more CDC-like perspective. Quick aside here, a related piece from Ethan Huff in the same source says the NIH has spent more than $700 million in taxpayer money to develop various coronavirus pharmaceuticals, vaccines, and bioweapons. So, yeah, it's fair to ask, could there be a not-so-hidden agenda here? Mike Adams wraps things up this way. Remember, the CDC is still saying there are no community outbreaks because they make that easy. They're simply not testing for community outbreaks. And if they continue doing that, there never will be any confirmed outbreaks in America, since the CDC prohibits the testing of any American who's infected by another person in America who hasn't been to China, unquote. And just so we know where Mike Adams is coming from, a previous story of his over the weekend says the CDC appears to be covering up over 1,000 infections of the coronavirus already in the United States. And they're engaging in this coordinated cover-up by withholding testing kits from U.S. hospitals and clinics, resulting in a situation where only 3 states in this country are actually conducting any testing at all, meaning that 47 states are actually carrying out 0 coronavirus testing, while the CDC itself has only tested 414 people in the entire nation. And he includes their flow chart to make the point, showing that any American showing symptoms but who didn't travel to China and doesn't realize they might have had close contact with an infected person who did, will not be tested. All of this despite the fact that 250,000 Chinese students attend U.S. universities and unknown thousands of them traveled back to the United States after the recent Chinese New Year and the lockdown in Wuhan. So the CDC strategy appears to boil down to avoiding testing so they don't have to report confirmed infections.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along.
In America with a K, however, folks, it's not just coronavirus deaths that get covered up. Arkansides, too, have a way of continuing to happen and continuing to be lied about, especially when it's real whistleblowers, as opposed to the fake kind that get congressional protection and you're not even allowed to say their names. One real one who did go public, and whose name we are allowed to say, was Philip Haney, Department of Achtung Homeland Security whistleblower and co-author with Art Moore of a book entitled See Something, Say Nothing, A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. Among a number of things that didn't endear him to the deep state, but did mark him as a real whistleblower as opposed to the Eric Sharamella faux kind, Haney told Sean Hannity in 2016 that he was ordered during the Obama regime to scrub the record of Muslims in the United States with terrorist ties. Kristen Taylor, writing for the Gateway Pundit, tells us that Haney's body was found Friday morning by his car on a highway in Plymouth, California, with a single gunshot wound that Almador County officials are saying appears to be self-inflicted. And a firearm was reportedly found next to the body. Says the official office of the sheriff and coroner, no further details will be released at this time, but hey, trust them, quote, this investigation is active and ongoing. So it hasn't yet been ruled an Arkanside, in other words. Meanwhile, others who knew him are expressing, to put it mildly, skepticism of the reports of suicide. Author, speaker, and radio host Jan Markle writes, my friend Phil Haney was found shot yesterday in California. I had lunch with him a month ago. He warned something could happen to him. He was to get married in a month. It will be falsely called a suicide, unquote. Representative Steve King of Iowa wasn't buying it either. He tweeted the following. Phil Haney was a friend and patriot. He was a target because of all he knew of Islamic terrorist cover-ups. And he added, listen to this, folks, he ensured his life by archiving data that incriminated the highest levels of the Obama administration. Phil Haney didn't kill himself. R.I.P. Phil, unquote. All of which tends to make the skeptics among us wonder what else has been bleach-bitted now over the weekend. There is, of course, other news today. Probably no surprise to anyone that the terror state continues to advance under the cover of a pandemic, whether real, imagined, or encouraged. And even if people like the evil Michael Bloomberg are a debating disaster and a laughingstock even when it comes to being the nominee of the Socialist Party of America, a.k.a. the Democrats, he's still got billions and he still intends to do what he can behind the scenes to make sure your firearms are stolen, a la Adolf, Mao, and Stalin. And he's obviously got all kinds of anti-constitutional buddies deep in the deep state. So, courtesy of D.C. Dirty Laundry and sources like the Gun Owners of America, listen up, they write. ATF is attempting to sneak in a national gun registration behind the scenes, and the comment period is only till Monday, the 24th of February. Hey, that's today. What they're trying to do is to change the anti-constitutional 4473 form, where peons have to get permission from Big Brother to buy or sell the only piece of property explicitly named in the Constitution, about which, by the way, it says, shall not be infringed, which tells you what's been done to the Bill of Rights. But they're obviously not done yet. Because even though the American people were lied to when this abomination was put into what now passes for law and told that these 4473 forms cannot be taken, at least as long as the FFLs that have them are still in business, and the ATF isn't supposed to make copies of them, but of course they do, and there's not supposed to be a record of them, but of course they're already doing that too, even though it's illegal, Well, if you're Big Brother and you get away with something for long enough, eventually, you know, you better go back and make it legal to do what you intended to do all along anyway. And that, say the stories, is what this new proposal is all about, allowing a seamless transition to a previously forbidden, but not really, national gun registry. It's a bell that cannot be unrung. And are you ready for this? The justification is what's called the Paperwork Reduction Act of 1995. And how do you do that if you're Big Brother and you want a gun registry? Answer, cloud-based collection and digitization, a searchable registry. Now, if you remember, back in the World War II era, when gun banner extraordinaire Adolf Hitler invaded places like Poland, he had to send his Nazi stormtroopers all over the place to get the gun registry so they could go out and kill anybody that might resist the Nazi occupation. But technology marches on, and once America's Gestapo has their way, it'll be so much easier for them next time. We'll close with something that's so Soviet totalitarian, I don't think you'd believe it unless you heard it for yourself. This is MSNBC's empty talking head host, Katie Tour, who recently interviewed former FBI Assistant Director for Counterintelligence, Frank Figliuzzi, in a segment in which the two evidently decided to endorse creating all kinds of new and improved false flag scenarios to entrap so-called white supremacist extremists, just like they've been doing for years. Used to be, when they got caught, they lied about it and tried to cover it up. Now they just double down. This next story and clip come from Shane Treho via Big League Politics. Listen to this.
You know, when you're looking at ISIS or you're looking at radical Islamic terrorism, I covered a number of stories where the FBI would track young kids and or young men, and they would talk to them online and say, you know, here's how you build a bomb, or here's where you get your bomb making materials, and they tracked that person as that person radicalized and then arrested them before they could do anything bad.
And, of course, when they didn't, that was okay, too, because then we had an excuse for doing nastier stuff next time around. Can you believe it, folks? This flaming leftist idiot just actually came out and said, hey, why don't we encourage more terrorists, and you can teach them how to be better terrorists and radicalize them, and then we can do what I saw on my shampoo label. Wash, rinse, repeat. And the FBI traitor doesn't even deny it. He's thrilled. Listen to this again.
Are young men, and they would talk to them online and say, you know, here's how you build a bomb, or here's where you get your bomb making materials, and they tracked that person as that person radicalized and then arrested them before they could do anything bad. Why is the same not being done for white extremists, or is the same being done? We just don't know about it.
No, it's time to seriously ask that question and to wrestle with it, because politics does enter in. And as you said, as soon as you mention even the need for a domestic terrorism statute, right, that addresses this, you'll hear people start screaming, this is the thought police. You're trying to suppress thought.
No, you lying, traitorous charlatan. That's only the beginning of it. You're not just trying to suppress speech and thought. You're trying to destroy what's left of all of the Bill of Rights. You've already destroyed the Fourth Amendment, and you've been setting up these false flags to work really hard and destroy the Second Amendment, too, along with a lot of innocent people's lives in the process. But this guy isn't just proud of the fact that the FBI has a history of inciting violence and then entrapping people into committing what they were encouraged to commit by the Federal Bureau of Instigation, and that makes them the heroes when they stop it so they can go on and do worse stuff next time around. Listen to this again. For crying out loud, he doesn't even deny the entrapment, and he's not only proud of their treason, he wants more of it.
No, it's time to seriously ask that question and to wrestle with it, because politics does enter in.
Oh, folks, it sure as hell does. That's what this coup has been about from the beginning. And no, it's not just about Orwellian criminalization of thought.
My answer to that is, this is not about thought. This is about verbalizing an intention to commit violence. That's what we're talking about.
And yeah, I clipped the quote there because that's what they are intending, and that's as close to an admission as we're going to get. He goes on to talk about partnership with local so-called law enforcement to get ahead of this so they can radicalize and entrap what they call white extremists in false flag operations. Joe Stalin's got nothing on these people. This traitor's name, folks, is Frank Figliuzzi. And the fact that he still works at Fear Begets Idiocy, rather than being caught by one of their own entrapment operations, tells you all you need to know about why this used to be illegal. Trump ought to fire this scumbag, and then he should be tried, even if he's in fact legion. and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.